Well, we interrupt this news. We're going to go live to Lebanon and listen to the Secretary General of Hezbollah, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, speaking.
In the prisons of Baghdad, all of these are occasions which are related to the Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him, as a blessing and also as a shedding of spreading our belief and sorrow for the sorrows of the Prophet, also for all the Muslims who believe in him and in his Isra and Ma'raj, and all agree on loving him and loving his household. Brothers and sisters, at the time which I have available, in this time I have available, I will speak about certain issues. Of course, we do not have enough time to speak about all the issues which we are expected to address on such a day. So, on one hand, we don't have enough time, and the nature of the occasion cannot fill in all these issues, and also there are many other matters which are very sensitive, and deliberately I don't want to speak about those issues now. This doesn't mean I will ignore them, but because I am taking into consideration some interests. Now, first of all, with regards to the occasion of the victory achieved on May 25th, the year 2000. We gather here today, just as we do every year on this day, in order to stress, year after year, and we need to stress generation after generation on the following meanings. First of all, regarding the historic nature of this achievement, this victory, and the significance of this victory and its meaning, the meaning which it carries. And we spoke about this, and my colleagues also spoke about it a lot, and a lot of studies and research was conducted regarding this victory. The most important was the toppling of the Israeli project, and the repercussions of this victory still exist, and they still continue on both sides of the front, on our side here in Lebanon, in Palestine, in our Ummah, and also on the side of our enemy. And if it were it not for this victory, then we wouldn't have witnessed the other victories which came afterwards and the other achievements. We can truly indeed describe the victory of the 25th of May year 2000 as the victory which laid the foundations for the era of victories, the victory which laid the foundation for the era of victories which came, and the era whereby defeat stopped and were put on hold. Second of all, this victory and this achievement is a Lebanese national, Arab national, Islamic achievement. We cannot only say, and nobody of us alleges, that it is only related to one party or one movement or one faction or one sect or one specific area or one specific nation. It is for the Ummah, this Ummah which is fighting one battle against the Zionist project and the project of American hegemony on the sanctities and the region and on the resources of the region. We always stressed and we always strived for this celebration to carry this meaning. We always wanted to be a victory for the nation and for the Ummah. Number three, it respects, respecting the great sacrifices which were made by our people, the great sacrifices, whether it be sacrificing themselves or their children or their money or their belonging, their property or their security, and what the resistance movements also sacrificed, all different factions of resistance, the army, the security services, the Syrian Arab army also on Lebanese territory, and the Palestinian factions, and stressing that this achievement is a result of all of these great sacrifices put together. It didn't come for free. Number four, By celebrating this occasion every year, we want to further enhance and raise our hopes for the future, increase confidence in victory, increase our confidence in confronting one of the biggest army or occupation armies, one of the biggest challenges. This culture, this belief in God, this belief in our people and in our peoples, this belief in our human, in our humanity, in ourselves first of all, belief in our men, women, elderly, our young and our families. This belief and this confidence, this culture, this is what enabled us to enter into the era which we call the era of victories. So ever since year 2000 until the defeat of Israel in Gaza and its withdrawal from Gaza in August 2005, going to the defeat of Israel in July 2006 and Gaza's perseverance and steadfastness in 2008-2009, the 22-day war, and also the 8-day war in 2012, then the Breaking the Silence operation in Gaza a few months ago, and between that, those battles we saw the defeat of the strongest army in the world, the American occupying army of Iraq, in 2011, December 2011. This era of victories is a result of this culture and this conviction and this confidence. And so the most important result or conclusion which we always reach, and today we stress on it, ever since May 2000 until today, the important conclusion is that we can achieve victory, and we have achieved victory on more than one occasion, and that the enemy, however strong he may be, however capable he may be, whatever the weapons he possesses, whatever the army he has, he can be defeated by our will, and he was defeated on more than one occasion. What is most important of all, my dear brothers and sisters, is that we have this faith and we have this confidence. We rely on God, we have this determination, we have this will, and to continue our efforts, because belief by itself is not enough, or faith by itself is not enough. It is our duty on this occasion, and due to the events which are taking place in our region, it is my duty to refer to the moral, ethical essence of this resistance and its victory in 2000. Unfortunately, today, they are trying to establish an impression or a scenario. They are trying to link between Islam, the Islamic movements, the Islamic groups, the Islamic framework. They're trying to link this with blind killing and slaughtering and destruction and burning and massacres and mass genocide operations and the destruction of holy sites and beheadings and also digging graves and opening up chests and killing and issuing judgments of execution on others just because they disagree only in the political stance and not for any religious or ideological reasons. This linkage is a crime against Islam, and it is betrayal by those who are doing it, who are carrying it out. We don't have enough time, and I don't want to go into an educational debate or an ideological debate about this, although it does require such a debate. However, what I do want to say is that on the 25th of May, I want to say that we are witnessing a different example. We are going through a different experience in the victory of the resistance in 2000 in the south. On these same days, at that period, thousands of mujahideen, thousands of fighters who carried arms, heavily armed, they entered into the occupied territories, they entered into its cities, they entered into its villages, and our people, our Lebanese people, were there. Those people who belonged to different religious sects, various affiliations. And despite the fact that some of their sons were involved in what took place against the south of Lebanon and the Biqar and Lebanon by the enemy, although some of them were collaborating with the enemy, some of their sons, everybody remembers those days. How people were able to practice self-restraint, and how everyone, no one was harmed, the churches, the money, the holy sites, the trees, the plants, the rocks, the people, nobody was harmed in any way whatsoever. Nobody was harmed. This resistance was created by Islam. This resistance is an Islamic resistance. It is a Lebanese resistance, it is a national resistance, and it is an Arab resistance. Yes, that's right. However, this resistance is also an Islamic resistance, and what it did, or what it gave, the experience it presented in 2000 really represents true Islam and the values of Islam and the ethics of Islam and the teachings of Islam and the forgiving of Islam and Muhammad ibn Abdullah, the great prophet of Islam, may peace be upon him. Any Muslim who alleges that he is a Muslim and affiliated with Islam, when he behaves well, he's behaving well towards himself and towards his religion. But when he behaves badly, he's behaving badly to himself, because his religion does not accept such behavior and such insults. Brothers and sisters, in the current situation, or regarding the current situation with the Israeli enemy, now, that was regarding the occasion. Regarding the current situation, first of all, we stress on the policy of deterrence with the enemy, meaning the necessity for Lebanon to possess the ability to deter the enemy, the strength to deter the enemy, because this strength, or this policy, or this strategy, name it what you want, it is the only way to protect Lebanon, to protect its territory, its people, its institutions, and its state, and its riches, and its capabilities, its water, its oil, its gas, its entity, its existence, its future, its dignity, its sovereignty, in light of the imbalance of deterrence with the enemy. We have no other strategy, and actually no other strategy, alternative strategy, was presented, serious strategy, which wants to achieve this aim. On the celebration of resistance and liberation, we stress that we hold on to the golden equation, the equation of the army, people, and resistance. Whether it was written in a cabinet manifesto or not, of course its meaning does exist in the manifesto. The Arabic language actually shaved the cabinet manifesto. This meaning, the army, resistance, and people, does exist in the current cabinet manifesto. However, some people stop on the terms and the words. What is most important of all is the meaning. What is most important of all is that Lebanon have this capability to defend or to protect the country. At the time where we support developing the capabilities of the Lebanese army, the human capabilities, the technical capabilities, of course, we do support it. We are not against it, although some people try and give such an impression. I would like to stress to you today that the resistance, despite all the developments which are taking place in our region, first and foremost what is taking place in Syria, despite all this, the resistance is preserving this deterrent capability, and this is what the enemy has confessed to, and the enemy is calculating very much regarding this matter. And on the other hand, I'd like to assure you that the resistance is working day and night in order to further develop this deterrence capability, and this is something which is causing concern for the enemy, and the enemy is always speaking about it. And so We are not just sitting down and preserving our capability. No, we are working to develop the deterrence capability, and this is one of the concerns of the Israeli. We are not just sitting down and preserving our capability. No, we are working to develop the deterrence capability, and this is one of the concerns of the Israeli enemy. The Israeli enemy always looks to Syria and to Iran and to all of our friends and what they could provide or what they have provided for this resistance. In the issue of possessing a deterrence capability, you cannot reach the stage whereby we say that's enough. No, because you're speaking about Israel, you're speaking about the Israeli army, you're speaking about one of the strongest armies of the world, and so it is our duty to further develop our deterrence capability, irrespective of all of the sideline discussions which speak about the arms of a resistance and the future of the arms of a resistance and where this could reach. Put this aside, but we, based upon our belief in the righteousness of this equation regarding the resistance specifically, we are working in this direction. Second of all, we are also required to address the other outstanding issues regarding Lebanon's confrontation with Israel, meaning the issue of the Shib'a farms, the Kfar Shuba hills, the Lebanese part of the Ghajar village, the issue of the resistance fighters or the civilians, the martyrs or those who have gone missing or the prisoners, the issue of the Israeli air, land and sea violations. I'm not saying what's taking place now on the border, I'll go back to that. This is what remains of the Lebanese-Israeli direct conflict. Of course, the issue of Palestinian refugees and the return of our Palestinian brothers to their territory and to their properties, this is something related to the conflict in general, not related to the Lebanese side of the conflict. This, of course, requires care and attention. Let's recognize that there is nothing serious in this regard. The state speaks, it doesn't even speak actually. In the cabinet manifesto, people remember the Shib'a farms, the Kfar Shuba hills, etc., etc. And even we, even the resistance movements, not just us, the resistance factions and all of those who believe in resistance, this issue in one way or another, I don't think we have approached it in a serious manner. Let's make some self-criticism here. As a result of some events in the country, as a result of the developments which took place after 2005, 2006, events in the region, events in Syria, whatever. However, we must not ignore this issue. We must not take it out of our circle of responsibilities. Number three, the situation on the borders with occupied Palestine. You notice that recently, in the last few months, we have witnessed some kind of Israeli violations which have increased, actually, have sharply increased, meaning that here we have people on the borderline. They shout at them, they kidnap them, farmers who are attending to their farms, they open fire in the air in the Shib'a farms. We've witnessed the repetition of kidnappings and assaulting the shepherds and also the Lebanese farmers. In other areas, we saw the opening of fire. This is something which, in no doubt, there is no doubt we must focus on this. First and foremost, these violations, I'm speaking about the border, I'm not speaking about the air violations or sea violations or land, military land violations. No, anywhere the Israelis enter, and we know that they've entered or we discovered before that they entered, we are required to confront it. This is something which we spoke of last year and we're doing it. However, I'm speaking about this issue related to the direct events which take place on the borderline. The natural way to address this is that the army and the UNIFIL, UN peacekeeping forces, must intervene and contact and address the situation. And as long as the issue doesn't reach danger, enter the danger zone, then it's natural to continue to address this by the state. However, if this continues, this requires us to stop and take a look. On the other hand, I'd like to tell people, especially those who live on the frontline villages just across the borderline, what is taking place on the other side by the enemy, it's an expression of their anger on one side when they see you in your territories, in your farms, in your homes, when they see you happy, honored, with your heads raised high. They can't put up with it. The Israelis, whose entity, whose project is based upon humiliating, insulting, and assaulting, the Israelis can't put up with seeing our people on the borderline, on the villages on the borderline, from the coast to the higher areas. They can't put up with this, seeing people in their farms and in their homes feeling safe and going out, moving about day and night. They can't put up with this. Psychologically, this is part of the defeat of the enemy, which was brought about in 2000, on May 25, 2000. On the other hand, it's about the fear of the enemy. Previously, on this side of the border in Lebanon, we were the ones who were afraid. Our people were afraid. Our farmers, the inhabitants of the homes and the villages. Today, those who are on the other side in occupied Palestine are the ones who are afraid. On the other side of the border, today, they are afraid of the farmers, and they are afraid of the tractors, of the trees, of the branches of the trees. They are afraid of the sound of water. Even the sound of water makes these soldiers who sit on the border afraid. Today, we are witnessing an army which sits in its positions, which is more afraid than it causes fear. This army is more afraid than it causes fear. This is the reality of the situation. The fear of the Israelis today is not just regarding its soldiers on the border. You can see them, how they sit down with all this protection and shield, and even when they want to survey the borderline, they rely on the undroned or the robots, the undroned vehicles, unmanned vehicles, sorry. They are afraid to that extent. And even inside Israel, its political leaders, its military generals, its society, its settlement society, who have taken the territory of Palestine, they are afraid. They are afraid of the readiness of this resistance. Every time something happens, they ask themselves, what's happening? Every time a house is built, they ask, what's happening? So the issue also is related to the fear. It's related to the fact that this enemy is looking at the opposite side of the border and believes this opposite side is serious when it comes to being ready. And so any sound, any movement, any activity, any construction, any building, any planting, anything, they are concerned and they take into consideration any sound which they can hear. Now, I'd like to tell you, as you came back on the 25th of May, year 2000, and you traveled on the borderline, and just as you celebrated at that day, and as you raised flags that day, do this, continue, build, plant, travel, and do not be afraid of this enemy. Don't be afraid of him at all. This legend now has become an issue of the past, a story of the past. This legend has become a story of the past, which our children pass time with, and this enemy does not have the courage, and he knows it. We don't want to behave hastily as long as issues are being addressed. However, if these violations reach the stage whereby it is required, and I'll be clear here, if they reach the stage which require intervention from the resistance will not be silent to any insults or any breaches or any assaults on anyone of our honourable people throughout the border areas. Everything is in proportion. The resistance possesses the courage and the capability and the wisdom as well, and the calculations which enable it to prevent such a reality which the enemy wants to impose on the border area. This is regarding the Israelis. Now, with respect to Syria, on this same day last year, the 25th of May 2013, and from Majghara, the village of Majghara, the village of martyrs, the village of the leader of the martyrs, Abu Hassan al-Bujaiji, and his comrades. I discussed the situation in Syria. I also presented Hezbollah's vision regarding what is taking place, the project, the dangers, the threats, the opportunities, the challenges, the dangers which are linked to this reality, dangers for Syria, for Lebanon, for Palestine, for Iraq, for Jordan, for the region as a whole, and for the Ummah as a whole, and especially for Palestine and its cause, and for Lebanon and its resistance and its people. And so I don't want to repeat what I said in that speech. And 1 year has passed now, and I, together with my colleagues and my friends, all of those who agree with us in this vision, during different occasions by television, we explained this issue. I said at that day that we will assume our responsibility. We will not stand and watch. And I explained our stance. Then we saw the events which took place throughout the year, and in our point of view, what took place, these events prove that everything we said and our analysis and our stance was correct. In general, I tell you once again, why do we stand with Syria? And why do we stand side by side with Syria? Why do we defend Syria? Just to remind you, I just have a few lines to say, to remind you that Syria was and still is the heart of Arabism, and it stood against the Israeli expansion and protected all of the Eastern Arab or the Mushrik, including the Gulf countries. They protected it from the Israeli hand, which aims to establish the Greater Israel from the Nile River to the Euphrates River, and its project is limitless. And Syria was the only one which stood in support of Egypt, and Syria was and still is the country of confrontation, and it is the one which brought about the Cairo Declaration, and it is still working by itself, and it still has the honor of not communicating with the enemy or signing anything or establishing any kind of ties with Israel. And Syria is the one which protected and supported and is still supporting the Lebanese and Palestinian resistance, and it paid a price for this sake, and it is still fighting for this. This Syria, it is the Syria which we are defending. So why don't we have the right to defend our backbone and our supporters and the honor and the Arab beacon which stands against normalization and surrender at the time where we find that in the Israeli entity we have people, we have Zionists who come from all over the world, and they are still coming from all over the world, from all countries of the world, in order to defend this fantasy in their sick minds by crimes and by racism. We believe that our stance and what is behind our stance is very clear. Today, on the contrary, now, after 1 year has passed since that speech, now the project has become clearer. We always said that there is a project in the region, a project which wants to divide the region once again, to divide it on sectarian, on racial basis or sectarian basis, religious basis. However, it seems, my brothers and sisters, that when we witness what is taking place in Syria and in more than one Arab country, the project is to divide it even more, not just on sectarian lines. They want to divide it into different emirates, different cantons, one country for every armed group. Every armed group then has its own entity, 5, 6, 7. Previously, they said Syria will be divided into 3 or 4, Libya into 2 or 3, Tunisia this or that, Egypt this or that. It seems that this is talk of the past. The new, what we hear now, is to divide our Arab countries, to divide our Arab and Islamic countries in accordance with the number of armed groups, not in accordance with the number of races or sects or religions. Even the one organization, when their commanders disagree, then they would create 2 states, for example, the state of the ISIL and the state of al-Nusra. This is the ugliest form of chaos, which ignites more chaos and which destroys the region. And this project is a project which we must confront. Today, when we confront this project and when we confront the tools of this project, we also recall that those who created Israel, those who created this entity, and I'd like to remind you, in the Zionist movement, who said that they were coming to Palestine? They wanted a state anywhere in the world, and so for this reason they referred to Argentina as one of the alternatives. Uganda was another alternative. I think Yemen was also one of the alternatives, and Palestine was another alternative. But those who brought the Zionist movement to Palestine are the British. The colonial, world colonialism, global colonialism, in order to establish a military security camp in the heart of our region, which rips our region apart and destroys our region, and which wastes all of the opportunities, the growth, human growth, economic growth, and all opportunities to achieve unity and opportunities to rise in our Arab and Islamic region. And the aim was to keep us preoccupied in our wars and to go from one war to another and one front to another and to be exhausted and then to resort to those who created our enemy and request protection and strength from that side which created the enemy. They are the ones who brought the Zionist project to Palestine, and they are the ones who brought the Zionists from all different parts of the world. This is a historic sin. Today, this sin is being repeated. But how? Today, of course, they also came with Arab support and with Arab signatures and with Arabs turning their heads elsewhere, Arab leaders who wanted to preserve their thrones. This took place 60 or 70 years ago. Today, this same scene is being repeated. America and the West and those who support them, they are sending all the terrorists from all over the world, from all different takfiri groups from all over the world, and they are providing them with facilitation, visas, financing, weapons, expenses, coverage, media, political cover, international decisions, etc., etc., and they bring them to Syria. For the sake of what? For the sake of destroying Syria and for the sake of destroying the resistance axis, which now threatens the essence of the Zionist presence in Israel's preservation in the region. This is the big sin. Is it a coincidence? From all over the world, they came to Syria. This didn't never happen before, even in Afghanistan. It didn't happen to this extent which we're witnessing today, not on the same magnitude. They come and they are provided with all facilitations from all over the world. And the governments are the ones who are doing this. And the intelligence agencies are the ones who are managing this. And they are brought to Syria in order to wage this brutal, difficult battle. Anyway, today, this understanding has been expanded in Syria and in the Arab countries, in the Arab world, in the Islamic world, in the whole world. Many questions which were not asked before are now being asked. And they're being asked by many people. These are very, very common questions. They're based upon this vision. We said that we would assume our responsibility, and we did assume our responsibility, and we went to where we went. Of course, you know that we don't speak in detail on the media. We went to the places where we went to, and we announced this, and we said this is the reason, this is the background, this is the goal. Today, what is the situation in Syria? What is the situation of this project? There is no doubt that the plot which targeted Syria and the region has witnessed a lot of the problems and suffered many defeats. There is also no doubt that there are many factors which contributed to this plot suffering some blows inside Syria and regionally and internationally, many events in the world. But the main factor is the battlefield. In all of these transformations and factors, the battlefield, Syria's steadfastness, it's the steadfastness of its leadership, its army, and its people, and hence here we have the importance of adding the other factor, the allies, the friends, the political stance, the media, the security, the military, the popular, etc. So, if Syria had not persevered, its army, its leadership and people, if they had not shown their steadfastness against this global war, then all the additional factors would not have decided the fate of the situation. One of the most important factors is uncovering the true face of the armed groups in Syria, or most of the armed groups, and the real nature of their behavior and their ideology and their confrontations. This led to a big change in the Syrian public opinion itself and the Arab public opinion and the international public opinion as well. It has become clear that those who were brought in order to threaten Syria are now threatening everyone. This is also a result. They threaten countries, those who gave them money and sent them and supported them and assisted them and encouraged them. Now they threaten these same sides who support them. The world who sent them to Syria, I said this before, they sent them in order to destroy Syria and the resistance axis and to get rid of them at the same time. However, it seems that this world has found that Syria and the resistance axis did not fall, and that those who were sent in order to kill or be killed, many of them are still alive, and some of them have begun to return to their place of origin, to Europe, to other areas, at other countries outside Europe. And so today we have something which is called the fighters returning from Syria. This is a threat for European security and international security and global security. And so how should the countries deal with this threat? One of the most important factors which we must highlight is uncovering the true role of the Israelis in the events in Syria. Previously, when we said Israel has a role, they used to accuse us and say we were exaggerating. But now it is clear it's not about a wall, a separation wall, for example, or a wounded who goes into hospital. No, political ties, political meetings, and it seems that the desperation of the so-called opposition coalition has reached a level whereby any enemy, like for example the Munafiqini Khalq, today they have met with them in some place in Europe, or for example this opposition person or that opposition person, now today the ties between the opposition and the Israelis, the cooperation on the border in the Golan Heights, the logistical assistance, also the weapons assistance, meaning that the Syrian Arab army is striking, or the Israelis are striking targets for the Syrian Arab army to serve the interests of the opposition, the armed groups, armed opposition groups. Now we are witnessing a project to create a new borderline in the Golan Heights. This is a threat, and I'd like to tell all of the Syrians that this is a very painful experience, and it will affect the Syrians, the Palestinians, and all different sides. It will be a disappointment. It will lead to losses for them, similar to what happened here in Lebanon with the separation line. Also, uncovering the magnitude of the threat of all of these groups for neighboring countries, especially Lebanon. Today, in light of all these factors which I mentioned, there are a lot of other factors which I didn't mention as well. In light of all this, we can say that Syria now has persevered. The resistance axis has persevered. The resistance axis has showed cohesion. Syria has showed cohesion. The other project has not achieved a real decisive victory, and that is closed now. We won't be able to achieve a decisive victory. That's a case closed. Syria is making progress, and so is the resistance axis. Syria is advancing on the battlefield, and you're witnessing this, and it's also making advances when it comes to the popular reconciliations. It's making advancements when it also comes to the public mood and the stances of certain figures and the opposition, some opposition groups. It's also making advancements towards presidential elections. All of this intimidation, this terrorizing, all of this which is being practiced by the so-called Friends of Syria, all their efforts to prevent this has not succeeded. And so here we have the Syrian people who are going to head to their ballot boxes. And we will witness all of these images. We shall witness all of these images. Now they are resorting to preventing the elections in Syria, where in the places where the elections could be held, by fire, by attacks. We all listened yesterday, we all witnessed yesterday that the ISIL, Islamic Republic of Iraq and the Levant, in Hasaka and elsewhere, ISIL declared that nobody is allowed to participate in the elections, even in the areas where they don't have the control, but areas where they could launch attacks, where their weapons could reach. They issued a judgment saying anyone who participates in these elections would be executed. But look, we have some Syrian person, we have a Syrian individual who has a vision. This is the alternative the world is bringing for the Syrians. I have a political choice. I want to go and elect, and I might elect President Bashar al-Assad, I might elect others. But then we see this civil alternative which the Friends of Syria are presenting, and they're saying if you go to the ballot boxes, we can shed your blood and I decree killing you. This is nothing new. This is the way ISIL thinks. ISIL, the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, meaning which judged all Iraqis who participated in elections as takfiris, all of them, whether they be Shia, Sunnis, Christians, Muslims, whoever. They carried out bombing attacks. They sent car bombs to target them because they judged that they are kafirs and that they are fighting the Prophet, they are fighting God. Not just saying that they are kuffar, non-believers, but they are people who don't believe in the teachings. This is the example which they're presenting. So I would also like to say that Syria is advancing when it comes to elections, and the biggest challenge is to allow the Syrian people, especially in the areas where the armed groups are able to attack, to allow them to express their will and to go to the ballot boxes and to the ballot stations and to elect. This is forbidden because according to ISIL, according to Nusra and Al-Qaeda and these groups, these elections are forbidden. Haram, not just forbidden, they are considered to be kufr, and they believe that elections are a war against Allah and His Prophet. Okay, you have your belief. Why do you want to impose this belief on all Muslims? Many of the Islamic scholars of the highest senior Islamic leaders, Sunni and Shia, don't have this same stance, and they believe that these elections are legitimate elections. They believe in a different way. Anyway, today I can say with regards to Syria, and before I go and speak about Lebanon, in order not to take a lot of your time, after all of these developments, I can say the following. In 2006, there was a regional project, but the confrontation was in Lebanon. It was a regional project, but the confrontation took place in Lebanon, the new Middle East, the birth of the new Middle East. Okay, now the battle was in Lebanon. We, the resistance, the Lebanese resistance, with all of our factions and the Lebanese army, the Lebanese people, we, all of us, we stood and we fought. We fought that project, and we were able to topple this project. Syria stood with us, Iran stood with us, many of the honorable people and sides of the world stood with us. Today, now, this was toppled in 2006. This copy of the new Middle East, that copy was toppled. Now they have a new copy or a new version. This version is for the whole region. However, the battlefield is in Syria. Those who are fighting in Syria, the leadership, the Syrian leadership and the Syrian army and the Syrian people, they are fighting in Syria. The friends are standing side by side with them in order not to exaggerate. That is the truth of what is taking place. There is a lot of exaggeration which we've heard. Some say, for example, that Syria and the army and the leadership and the people, there are some place, and those who are fighting in Syria are this people, that party or this party. That's not true. We have a people, we have an army, we have a state, we have a leadership which is fighting throughout Syria, throughout all the territories of Syria. There are friends which are providing a kind of assistance which differs from one side or from one friend to another. Now, today, on this front, we have steadfastness, and this project has begun to crumble, and I'd like to tell you, God willing, that this project will be toppled and Syria will achieve victory and the resistance axis will achieve victory, and this ummah, will not allow the American project to impose its agenda or its ideas or its goals on us. And the day will come where everyone will stand. Listen well. Now, mark my words. Here, this is analysis. I believe in God, and I believe in God's promise, And I believe in the reasons and the results and the introductions which lead to results, etc. Who would have believed that Syria would stand as it is today with steadfastness? Who would have said that we would have seen such a situation in many Syrian cities? Syria, which 3 or 4 years ago, we used to hear that it will fall in 2 or 3 months. The time will come when all the truths are uncovered, the day will come whereby the people of the region, the governments of the region and many countries and countries of the world also will come and thank Syria and its leadership and its army and its people for their steadfastness and for their victory, because they will discover that Syria, with this steadfastness, was able to fend off dangers and catastrophes on the level of the region, and first and foremost in Palestine and the Palestinian cause and the Islamic and Christian sanctities in Palestine. I tell you, even the governments who conspired against Syria and paid money and incited, and some are still doing so, the time will come where they will regret what they did and thank Syria for its steadfastness and for its victory and perseverance. The same goes for Lebanon. And all those who criticized us for our intervention in Syria, they will also come back and say, well done. They might not say it in the media, but under the table, in closed sessions, they might say this. The last point is, and I apologize, I usually take 1 hour, I haven't reached the 1 hour stage yet, but regarding the internal Lebanese situation, the most important file in Lebanon now is the presidential issue. And here, at this moment, I'd like to say that we are now in a very important, sensitive period which has begun from today. The issue of the accusations, this is something which is common in Lebanon. People want to work, they want to occupy themselves. They say, you are behind this vacuum. They say, no, you. They say, the region, international factors are behind the vacuum. We hear all of this. This is natural. That's not the most serious issue. When it comes to rumors and accusations, anyone can say what he wants. I say that we must deal with this sensitive period in a very calm manner, without anger. Yes, it's true. Some people said that it's a very difficult period, but this doesn't mean that people should lose their temper and that the country fall. We must be calm and we must preserve this level of civil peace, of internal stability, of the ability for people to talk to one another in some places, for people to negotiate on the presidential issue. Here I'm speaking now internally. I'm not speaking about the regional powers. What is most important of all is for all of us to exert efforts in order to minimize the time period, meaning to have an elected president as soon as possible. As soon as possible. And nobody should have the real intention to waste time and change for regional changes or international changes, etc. We are calling for a serious approach in this regard, etc. We are calling for a serious approach in this regard. Of course, I don't have time to go in depth and go into deep analysis about the presidential issue. There is still a real opportunity, an internal Lebanese opportunity, to elect a strong, capable president capable of preserving stability and peace in the country, and a president who enjoys real popular support in his environment and on the level of the nation as a whole, and also a president who is capable of reassuring the political factions, the different sides, and really capable of assisting in order for Lebanon to overcome this difficult phase locally, regionally, and internationally. This opportunity still exists, and there are serious negotiations now taking place between the Free Patriotic Movement and the Future Movement, or the leader of the Future Movement. They have been holding discussions for some time. Now they are negotiating, and there is a serious discussion taking place. What has occurred until now? I don't want to go into these disagreements. I want to describe it in two sentences. Is a challenging candidacy to prevent a serious candidacy. What happened, I repeat, they presented a challenging candidate, not in order for this candidate to reach the presidency and not in order to hold presidential elections, and everyone knows that there's no way this could happen. No way for this candidate to reach the presidential post, whether it be by two-thirds or by 50% plus one. So this candidacy, it aims to block the road to a serious candidacy on the other side, which is being discussed behind national closed doors. The real project, and I take responsibility for what I say, because we're now on the 25th of May, and based on my information and based on the contacts which were held with us and many of our friends, the real project over the past few weeks and few days, and maybe over the past few months, never was the aim to elect a president before May 25. I'm speaking about the other side. Never was the aim to elect a president before May 25. Their real project was to extend the term of the president. That was their project. That was their goal. Nobody should accuse us of disrupting the process. They didn't want to elect a president. They wanted an extension of the term of the president. That's the truth. Now, it's good to say things as they really are. And so for the sake of extending this term, a lot of incentives were presented. For the sake of this extension, a lot of incentives were presented. I don't want to uncover secrets today, because that's not my way, that's not how I usually speak, but in the end everything will become clear. In this country everything becomes clear. So what has taken place in the elections up until now is that we had a challenging candidate, and it's clear that this challenging candidate cannot be elected, to block the road for a serious candidate who could reach the presidency, and disrupting the election of a president for the sake of extending the term. And this failed. This extension failed. This plan of extending the term failed. Now, what are the reasons why do we have such a stance? I'm saying this is what happened. Nobody should say anything else. There was no opportunity for the parliament to elect a president, no. The opportunity was only to extend the term. What is most important of all today is to continue with our efforts. Of course, between brackets, as I said at the beginning, there are some who might want to say, we, the loyal to the resistance bloc, they're accusing us, we have no problem. They hold us responsible. You can hold us responsible. You can say what you want. You disrupted the elections, the country, you disrupted this, that, but aren't you the ones who are saying that the presidential post is something great in the country? So it's nothing simple. It's no simple issue. This issue is a national responsibility and a historic responsibility, because we are in a historical phase, and so there's no problem. I'd like to tell you, we, Hezbollah, the loyalty to the resistance parliamentary bloc, on behalf of Hezbollah's MPs, we take responsibility. Accuse us of what you want, no problem. No problem. What's the difference between this accusation and all the accusations we heard throughout the years, that we want disruption, we want vacuum, we want to change the country, we want to change the state? Say what you want. But what is most important of all is to exert serious efforts for people to go and to complete this dialogue. This dialogue should be completed in order to reach a certain stage, a stage which opens the horizon in order to come out of this vacuum. This is regarding the presidential issue. Of course, we are open, we are serious. We do want a president as soon as possible. But, of course, we didn't want extension. Now, let me say something, although I had delayed it, but because of the occasion, the celebration of resistance, when it comes to the presidency, we don't want the president to take more responsibility than he can. We want a president who brings about stability, even our own approach, but sometimes the rhetoric of our speeches are always boiling, but we agreed that we, even this term, we want a president who protects the resistance. We even reached an understanding that we don't need such a term, a president who protects the resistance. I'd like to tell you today, on the 25th of May 2014, we're not looking for a president who protects the resistance. We're not looking for a president as such. The resistance in Lebanon protects the state, and it protects the people, and it protects the nation, it protects the entity, protects the honor and the sovereignty, and it protects the ummah. We are humble in our goals. We want a president. We're not saying we want a president who protects the resistance. I remind you what we said in 2006, what we used to say in 2006. We want a president who does not conspire against the resistance, a president who does not stab the resistance in its back, a president who sticks to his stances regarding the resistance. This is what we want. Otherwise, we have no difficult conditions. We don't have difficult conditions. Anyway, is there, does such an alternative, does such a opportunity exist? Yes, we do have such an opportunity. Also, regarding the internal situation, whatever be the future scenario, we sincerely hope, some people might call it a call, a crying out, call it what you want. We have something called the salaries in Lebanon, which is related to those who work in the public sector, the teachers, the military personnel who are risking their blood in more than one place in the country. We really want this issue to remain outside of the disagreements. Make this something unique, the issue of the Lebanese university as well. These two matters, at the least, we hope, we request, we desire, we plead the parliament, the political factions. We must not delay these two issues until other political matters are settled. We are saying, if we want a state for the sake of the people, don't sacrifice the people for the sake of the president or for the sake of what should be natural, naturally in service of the people, the natural rights of the people. We hope that this is given specific importance. My beloved, on this occasion, on the anniversary of the 25th of May, we must all be confident in our strength and in our capability to confront the challenges, whatever these challenges may be. And we must be confident in our strength and capability to bring about victories, whatever the magnitude of the confrontation. We do not fear Israel, nor do we fear its threats or its ambitions or its terrorizing, because of this golden equation. The project in the region, the attacking project against the resistance axis in the region and against the Ummah, has begun to crumble. The resistance axis is holding together. It is advancing, and it shall achieve victory. What is most important of all is here in Lebanon, to preserve our country, to preserve its civil peace, its coexistence, and also to study our alternatives very well, which preserve and fortify this country and the future of this country. We pledge to all of the leaders, to Imam Sayyid Musa Sadr, may God bring him back together with his two comrades, our pledge to our martyrs, our pledge to the leading martyrs, Sayyid Abbas al-Musawi, Sheikh Raghib Harb, Haj Imad, our pledge to our Ummah and to our peoples, to all of the honorable people in the world. Our pledge is to stay in this stance, to remain, to stay together in this stance, to stay in our perseverance and steadfastness, and to resist and achieve victory in the era of victories. And happy anniversary, and assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.